Geek News Central, show number 183. Are you ready? Here it comes.
This is the Geek News Central Podcast, part of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. So grab a cup of coffee, take a seat, and crank up that volume. Because you're listening to Todd on the Geek News Central Podcast.
Hello, everybody. It's Tuesday, June 27th, and you are listening to the Geek News Central Podcast. My name is Todd Cochran, and welcome to the show. This show is sponsored in part by GoDaddy at GoDaddy.com. Hey, everyone. How are you? I know it's been a very productive weekend for me. A great day back to work. Some great stories going on in the tech news, and got a lot to talk to you about tonight. And hey, for all of you that are long-term subscribers, thanks. Thanks for being part of the family here, being part of the show. And when I say family, thank you for being part of the family. We're going to talk about family just a little bit. First things first, you know, how was your Monday back at work? I know mine was quite interesting because as I approached the door to my office today, there was a sign on the outside that said, fire alarm testing from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. today. And I'm like, how long does it take to test a fire alarm? Well, folks, I got in my office, and sure enough, at 8 a.m., they started testing the fire alarm about every 3 minutes. They must have had a problem of some sort because it went on and on and on. It was unbelievable. I couldn't believe it. And my coworkers and I, you know, every time we'd be on the phone with somebody and the fire alarm would go off, we'd have to explain it, hang up, because you couldn't talk. And a few minutes later, the fire alarm, by about 10:30, there was people in the hallways. I mean, there were people in the hallways mad, really, really mad. And by 11 o'clock, you know, I basically went into my boss's office and I said, I can't get no work done. The fire alarms keep going off. I'm out of here. And I pulled chalk. So, and the parking lot was emptying very quickly because everyone else was in the same boat. But that's how my Monday was. But I had a very good weekend and did a lot of things around here. I got my term paper completed, going through final editing now. I'm going to get it submitted into the professor this week, getting the paperwork wrapped up so that I'm ready to head off to GnomeDex on Wednesday evening. So I'm looking forward to getting out of here for a couple of days and going to that event. But we've been having our Blueberry introductory meetings, our launch meetings with our podcasters. I guess we've had about 60 in so far and a very, very positive response. Matter of fact, the kind of cat's out of the bag is one of the guys that attended took some screenshots, and I'll have a link up to it in the show notes. You'll be able to get an idea a little bit about the site. Some of the site wasn't completely ready. So we actually, some of the stuff's going to change on some of those screenshots he took, but that's okay. You'll get the general idea. I got home this afternoon, and we had a meeting scheduled to start at 9 p.m. Eastern, 3 o'clock p.m. my time. And I got here, and I got the computer fired up, and no internet. The internet was down, so I was kind of frantic because I was like, what am I going to do? I called the cable provider, and I said, oh, it's been down since 10 a.m., and we've got major problems going on with some sort of power supply or whatever, and we don't think it'll be up by time for your 3 o'clock meeting. So I thought, well, what do? I revert to dial-up because I still have a way to access via dial-up, and I thought, oh, maybe my EVDO card. I hadn't checked it here at the house for a while, but the EVDO card actually had 3G connectivity now here, so I plugged that in on the laptop, and we were able to get through that meeting. Had a lot of movement in the Podcast Awards site at podcastawards.com. Had a lot of some sponsor activity coming in, donating prizes, and I'm real happy with that movement, and it will continue on throughout probably the first couple of weeks of the site being up and online for nominations starting July 1st. I did get an email from one guy today saying, Todd, I'm no longer listening to your show. And he said, here's why. He says, you talk too much about your family and personal stuff. And, you know, all of you that are part of this family here understand that, you know, here in Hawaii, anywhere, family is important. And I get emails from you all the time, all of you saying, I love hearing what's going on in your household, what's going on with your wife, your kids, so on and so forth, the little quirky stories. So I don't know. And I'm like, okay, don't want to listen to what stuff I have to say about my family, then I guess you're not a subscriber anymore. So he's, you know, he said some blog, some other podcast is gives him his tech news and yet doesn't talk about personal stuff. So, hey, sorry to see you go, but we're going to keep on talking about family here from time to time at the Geek News Central podcast. Now, my wife tonight is in the office with me. She is doing some searching on the internet. We're going to take a few days short vacation after the kids get back from Japan and Michigan. And we're going to do something. The camping spots seem to be pretty full here on Oahu, so we may go over to Kauai or one of the other islands, spend a couple of days. There's a little price war going on with airline flights right now, so we're able to get tickets very, very inexpensive as compared to how they were before. So we're looking forward to that. Okay, one notice. Probably there will not be a regular show on Friday. It all depends on kind of what happens at Nomdex, how awake I am Thursday night. So I fly out Wednesday night, get in there Thursday morning, then go boom, right into stuff. I'm probably going to be going up to Microsoft Wednesday morning or Thursday morning. Then we have an event with the Nomdex registration and kickoff thing Thursday evening. So there probably won't be a show, but we're going to be doing stuff. There'll be stuff on Tech Podcast over at techpodcast.com with some announcements going on over there with what's happening. And we'll be having live blogging commentary and probably some short audio snippets from here and there. It's going to be a pretty crazy day. So we'll see if we get a show out or not. No promises. It may be kind of abbreviated show, but the main thing is we'll get something up for you. Now, we did get a response from our cash prize winner, and let me play her little segment here real quick for you so you guys can tell that, yes, we did. We gave some money away.
Hey, Todd, this is Bree in Washington, D.C. Yay, I'm a winner. I never win anything. This is great. Geek News Central is great, and total success to the Blueberry site launch. Thanks again. Yay.
Congratulations to that. She was Johnny on the spot. She had an email. I emailed her and said, you won, and she had emailed me back before I even went to bed that night after posting the show. So I'm glad to see that it was up. We've also got a contest winner for our podcast promo for the podcast award site. This promo is, I was pretty impressed, and we received nearly 30 entries. And what I would like the winner to do is, I'm going to be in contact with you. I want you to do a couple more in the same vein. But this turned out awesome, and we'll say who the winner is here after the end, but I'm going to play this for you right now. Now this promo is designed to be start played on July 1st, but let me play this for you.
Now hear this.
Want to know who decides what the best podcast is? You do. The 2006 Podcast Awards nominations are underway.
Here's all the details.
Go to podcastawards.com right now and nominate your favorite podcasts. Categories include technology, entertainment, sports, comedy, and more. Nominate and vote for your favorite podcasts. Plus, find new ones to subscribe to today at podcastawards.com. Brought to you by Podcast Connect, Inc., the world's leading innovator in podcast marketing.
Congratulations, Sam Garcia. Well worth it, my friend. That is awesome. Can you do some more? Can you do some more like that? Send me your 120 by 120 image graphic to geeknews@gmail.com. Congratulations. And wow, rock my world. Very, very good. I'm going to be very happy to put that out. And thanks so much for your entry. Now, also, I'm going to give away some GoDaddy gifts and prizes, but first let's take care of a little business, okay? Get more hits with GoDaddy's Traffic Blazer. Submit your site to over 200 of the world's top search engines in just minutes. Plus, see how you rank in search results, optimize your sites, and much, much more. Plus, enter the code GEEK5 when you check out and save an additional 15% off your order of $20 or more. Get your piece of the internet at GoDaddy.com. Geek5, GEEK5, for that 15% off. Okay, SpamTheInbox.com. Why in the world would you do that? That is the winner of our $100 and gifts and prizes to from GoDaddy for this go around this week. Spamtheinbox.com. That's a new one on me, and you guys can check it out, check the website out as well. So congratulations on that. And hey, you're gonna have to wait a little bit before we knock out the $100 cash prize winner, because we're gonna give that to you a little later in the podcast. So keep listening, okay? All right. Finally, before I get into some news tonight, of course, we've been making a lot of utilization lately of a GoToMeeting. It's been a great application to have people in for our presentations and stuff. And we wouldn't have been able to do that with any other application that is available today. But getting to and from meetings can be a real waste of time and money. And just like these promotions we've been doing, you know, we don't have to fly somewhere to demonstrate something. We can do it online. So save time and money by meeting online with GoToMeeting. And, you know, with GoToMeeting, invite people to meet you online. During your call, they see your computer screen or the monitor. Try GoToMeeting free for 30 days. No credit card required. Just visit GoToMeeting.com/techpodcast. Again, try it for free. No credit card is required. Thanks for GoTo for being a sponsor at Tech Podcast and our roundtable. Hey, the Honda promotion has concluded. And the folks at fit.honda.com, it's a wrap-up on there. And I hope you guys will have some post-survey requests for you here soon on that promotion. But thanks for Honda for doing the promotion here. And, hey, thanks for you for letting us have sponsors on the show and continuing to support everything on the network. Okay, what have I got in the news department today? I've got a whole I got a great stack of stuff. And let me get this prepped a little bit. Hey, you know, I will say I want to address something that was on my website that I put up today. And what do you do when a site lies about its traffic levels? And essentially what happened was is recently I've been shopping for some advertising in relation to a project I have going on. And I approached a certain website and they told me that they were getting 100,000 hits a day. And they said, okay, yeah, that's what we're getting, and you're gonna be charged around $15 CPM. Well, you guys do the math on that. There's no way I could even afford a day's worth of advertising with them. So I said, I'll pay you this much, but I want a code snippet put on your website that's going to allow me to see what the actual traffic rates are. And I said, oh no, we don't allow that. So I, you know, it already raised my sniff meter a little bit. And so what I did was I created a promotion on Google with their AdWords program. And lo and behold, their site accepted the same advertisement that I wanted to place on their website, but for a much lower CPM. So I started off and I entered a CPM rate of $3 CPM is what I put on the actual promotion. And I was able to get a measure on their traffic, and it turned out that their measurement level was, and I was looking at their websites across all the promotion sites that we were running the promotion on, and lo and behold, I found that we were getting, it looked like 100% saturation on their website. And what blew me away was when the totals came in, there was only about 8,400 hits for the specific day. Now, I was a little bit irritated. You know, it's one thing to say, okay, maybe I'm 7 to 20,000 a day. But it's another thing to say, no, my site's doing 100,000 hits and this is what the cost is going to be. I was pissed. And I've sent that specific site an email and that I've said that I will never, ever come back and advertise on their site ever again through them specifically. And that what they did, I thought, was tantamount to almost a criminal act in that they were essentially misrepresenting their actual show totals. There's nothing to be embarrassed with 8,000 page hits a day. That's great traffic. Okay, that really, really is. That's great traffic. But to say you have 100,000 inflate and try to gouge me. So what it ended up being was, is I was able to reduce the CPM rate even lower on the targeted AdWords campaign. And lo and behold, I was able to do essentially the same promotion on that particular website for maybe 1% of what it would have cost me otherwise, you know, versus what they wanted me to pay and what I actually end up paying. What is up with that? And, you know, especially anyone that's running an AdSense ad campaign or running AdSense ads on their websites, you know, we can go into AdWords and we can target specific websites. If you allow banners or if you allow graphic type of ads coming up on your website there, you know, you can target your specific AdSense ads at specific sites. And it gives you a total. It says in there 0 to 10K, 10K to 50, 50 to 100. It doesn't give you a real narrow amount, but it gives you an idea of what you're going to spend on a daily basis for an ad campaign. So essentially, I was able to get on the sites I wanted to get on, have the type of exposures I was looking for, and pay a lot less. If you're going to be out there running any type of AdWords campaign, this is where you're buying advertising on other people's sites, a buyer beware. Don't believe everything you're being told by the person that's representing the site, and demand to have a PHP piece of code. It's just very, very simple. It comes with most of those applications that will actually track the number of impressions that your advertising is getting. And if the second they say, no, we don't allow that, well, guess what? Then you need to raise the Ostinkometer and be very, very careful where you're spending your money at. That's for sure. Okay, and in along with that type of advertising stuff, that there's some research out, and this is over on clickz.com. They're saying that internet users are plagued by banner blindness. Now, how many times when you're visiting a site do you just absolutely do everything you can to avoid looking at the actual ads on the website? They're saying in the study that people are being more effective right now by having banner ads have strictly text in them. You know, just like your standard Google AdSense ads that come in with text. But what I've been doing, I haven't been putting a lot of fancy graphics in any of the ads that we've been running with our AdWords campaign. We've just been putting some very basic text with the just to the point information that, you know, is going to get them to click through. And it has done very, very well. It's done great. And we're happy with that. And I think maybe this is kind of related to it. So if you're out there and you're getting ready to do some campaigns or you're seeing some stuff come on your website, take a look at this article at clickz.com. I have it linked up in the show notes, obviously, and I think you'll learn something from it, and I think it'll give you some strategies to use. There was an article today by Peter T. Davis. He wrote an article saying that podcasts are an efficient means of content delivery, and he goes into this aspect of why are podcasts efficient? He doesn't believe that they are. You know, he thinks they're a waste of time, that people are burning a lot of time listening to shows where they could be getting this content read to them, or they could be reading it, or they could be using a news aggregator, whatever it may be. You know, in some aspects, I agree with some of the commentary here, but, you know, where do I consume most of my podcasts? I consume them on the road. I consume them when I'm just got lazy time in the house. Essentially, when I've got downtime in the office, that's where I'm consuming podcasts. And guess what? It's content that I want to feed my brain with. It's not stuff that's, you know, as you all know, it's content that you want to listen to and you specifically subscribe to and are connected to. So there's a pretty good debate on his website. I'll let you check it out and maybe you can add some comments to it. But it boils down to some other stuff that's in the news today on advertising dollars and where they're heading. Over on buzzmachine.com, there's an article that says, Advertisers, You're Next. And what this amounts to is that there is growing realization within the web-based community and those of us that are running sites that little by little advertising dollars are going to start turning our way because most of the traditional marketing, TV, radio, some of these other medias where they get huge, 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 huge billions of dollars of advertising revenue spent every year as the population of people that are online increases while these, you know, ask my daughter if she listens to radio. She doesn't. So when you start having the demographics move into being a purchasing age and also they're consuming their media different, the media advertising is going to move to the market that's online through mediums like podcasting and through online video stuff that's being done by people who are doing video casts. Not to say that we're ever going to get away from an advertising marketing sphere, because it just won't. It's, you know, it's an economy within itself. But just like the phone companies, these big marketing firms, they feel are scared with what's going on and how things are moving. And so, you know, they're right now in control of the advertising dollars on where they're going. But when we start to see the shift, they think it'll be an avalanche. And the question is, when is that avalanche going to happen, where there's going to be a major shift of dollars coming from the TV and radio sphere into internet, to MySpace, coming into podcasts, etc. But the prediction is it's going to be sooner than later. And that's where I, you know, that's if you look down the road 5 years, where I think the market is pretty potential for people that are creating good content that people are listening to and have targeted audiences, which, you know, all of you are like listening to a little bit of tech information and stuff that I intermix with the show here. So, you know, I hate to say it, but you all are a great target audience for an advertiser. And, you know, and you guys put up with it. Some of you may fast forward through the ads, but I think for the most part, as I've seen comments come back from people, it's most of you listen through them. You may not fully tune in at that time, but you know that they're there. Okay, over on the Apple iPod front, apparently that Chinese city has admitted to actual labor law violations, saying that they've reversed what they said last week. They're only making their workers over there work an extra 80 hours a month. That's all they're really requesting, is an additional 80 hours a month. So if you think about that, when you're in almost a slave camp type of situation where you're getting a pittance of a salary and you're going back to a dormitory, what else do you have to do but work for an extra 80 hours a month? And, you know, that's that money all goes in their pocket, of course. Well, that is a... We're waiting for Apple's response, but this company has, you know, reversed what they said. But, you know, it's only 8 hours, right? You know, so how many of you work a regular 40-hour work week? You know, I don't work a regular 40-hour work week. My work week is basically 5 a.m. until midnight every 6 days a week, you know. So I don't know. What do you guys think? Could you handle another 80 hours of 80 hours a month of salary? Would it be worth the trade-off in what time you lose from your family and everything else? Okay, over on ZDNet, there's a very good article by David Berlin saying that RSS is the new intranet protocol. And I guess I want to go into this just a little bit. You know, we're living in a growing medium on site on the internet right now, where the transfer of data is becoming much more easy, where your information goes from one place to the other almost transparently. And I'm not talking about email. I'm talking about content that, like, you get from blogs and that your comments that you post. And, you know, all this stuff is becoming very web-centric, that you're using applications to access data, transfer it, where you're doing any type of utilization online, let's say for a wiki. And he uses a wiki as an example of this. If you're working with a group of people doing collaborative work and you're working within a wiki, you can actually get an RSS feed of the wiki that tells you every time a change is made, and it shows you the change. And then you can go back in and re-edit, or, you know, you just track stuff. Well, he believes that RSS is becoming that new intranet protocol. And, you know, there's been a lot of discussion where email, you know, we've already got the mechanism to transfer enclosures or you know, MP3s, but it could be anything. It could be videos, it could be Word documents, whatever it may be. As long as you've got trusted people that you're sharing that information with, and it's on the type of server infrastructure that will support it, you know, what's going to happen is we very well could get away from such a thing as being using a regular Outlook email. Email could go away in the traditional transfer protocol, and it could actually go to an application that is using Real Simple Syndication to go out and talk to a server and say, hey, you got some mail for me? And it says, yeah, I sure do. It grabs it, grabs whatever enclosures it is. And there could be a whole infrastructure set up with usernames and stuff where everybody is trusted and you have a trust. You know, it's very high possibilities in what can happen here with this new with RSS and the growing inclusion that Microsoft's doing to all of its products, including SharePoint, which is a collaboration technology. It's similar. It's the kind of the I believe it's a replacement to Groove, which we use at Raw Voice. That's a product that we use. But this is a very good. I think he hits a point on the head here on where we're going with RSS and it being the new protocol that is going to essentially revolutionize the way we transfer data even more than it is already. Do you remember a few weeks back when there was a market survey out that we talked about on the show that said that the Dig website was losing a lot of revenue because of the way its page design was? Well, apparently, Dig was in a revision at the time that was going on, and they're saying now with the new Dig 3.0 release of their website that their ad revenue could top $800,000 a month. And what I was shocked about was that Dig is actually able to demand, apparently, a CPM rate that is just, it's unheard of. I've never heard of CPM rates this high. They're saying that the Dig's new design is able to get $16 CPM for 728 by 90 leaderboards, $14 for 120 by 600 skyscraper positions, and $9 CPM for 125 by 125 blocks. And they're saying on here that the 125 by 125 slots often seem to be filled by Google AdSense ads. So what they're apparently getting down to is this works out with three ads on a Dig page. This could essentially equal to $36 per 1,000 views. Wow. Those are quitting your day job type numbers, folks. But very good analysis here, and there's even some commentary based on from Jason Calacanis, who is all about how they do ad placements on their family of websites. And saying that these big banners by 728 by 90 are good to go, and apparently a very high profit margin for them. You heard about this school that was in North Carolina. This was kind of a quick, dirty in and out type of situation, but a school in North Carolina went after Google. Essentially, had a judge do a injunction on Google to have them take some content down. The Google robot had went in and spidered the school's website and had essentially pulled some data on there that included students' names, social security numbers, all kinds of private data. And it was supposedly, quote unquote, on a password-protected DocuShare server. But apparently that where the documents were was not so secure. And but the moral of the story of this is that the school cried wolf before they realized it was their problem. And then when they did go to a judge and get an injunction, the judge forced the injunction. And primarily the reason it was the injunction was granted is because they had been trying to reach Google for like a week in order to get the, or maybe 3 days to get the content taken down. And that Google had an emergency request form on their website that was actually broke, so they couldn't submit anything. And they actually tried calling Google and could not get through their phone chain. So Google has become a very, very big company. And it goes to show you that if you have something on your website or on a server someplace that can absolutely unequivocally be linked from somewhere, just even randomly, someone finds something randomly, stand by. You very well could be setting yourself up for having data put on the internet and indexed by Google that you don't want to. So be very careful what you put out there. Make sure you have your access levels set correctly on your directories on your website. And if you're unsure whether or not it should be there or not, take it off, okay? Those search engines are a powerful thing. I've had a couple of things found over time that I didn't necessarily want found but turned up anyway. So keep your eyes peeled and read this article. It's a good lesson for any of you out there, the system administrators, and dealing with this kind of info. Now, as many of you know, many of you Windows users have been waiting for Windows Vista and the supposed new file system that they were going to come out that was labeled WinFS. Well, apparently Microsoft this week has essentially said, no, we're changing directions with WinFS, and they are going to go against every promise that they have made to improve the directory structure of Vista, and it's not going to be in it. So, they've been promising, I guess, since 2003 that this was going to be in there, but now they're going to shift it to like enterprise systems or SQL Server. And, you know, this is just an ongoing trend by Microsoft not to deliver on stuff that they promise. You know, I hate people making promises for stuff and then it coming out as vaporware, never ever makes it to market. And if it does, it's a different form that they don't improve on. So I guess we'll have to see what happens with this and what the saga is on WinFS. And what's shocking is that they, like 2 weeks ago, they were showing off new WinFS betas at TechEd, and they've been asking for new job postings. So apparently, you know, up to 2 weeks ago, everything was still good to go on WNFS. We will see. We'll see if it makes it out in any sort of iteration of form that they originally promised on. But we're definitely not going to be getting a new file structure, it looks like, for Vista, which is sad. Now, if I'm incorrect in this analysis on what this article is telling me, I'd like to hear from you. You can send me information at geeknews@gmail.com or call the voicemail hotline at 619-342-7365. And those of you that are listening to the show on this various streams that we're on, you're listening to the Geek News Central podcast at geeknewscentral.com. Okay, here's a little finance advice, and this is actually from a website called Personal Finance Advice at pfadvice.com. And, you know, when I was younger, I had a little bit of stupidity in the credit card department, and like many people, probably put more money on a credit card than I should have. And I did it at a time when interest rates were much, much higher, and credit card companies were not sending out these 0% offers or anything like that. But this personal finance advice gives some good advice that I used a number of times by calling companies. And if you're, you know, if you're not getting the deal you want to get, the biggest thing you can do is threaten to leave them. And if you threaten to leave them, you can, you know, make sure you've got an offer to back that up if you go there with intentions to move, because oftentimes you can get prices on your cable bill reduced, you can get your credit card interest rate deducted. All you got to do is call and ask. Sometimes they may give you a 6-month deal or something like that, but if you've got money in your credit card, it's a great way to save some interest and be able to pay that much farther ahead on a bill or get a your balance is down on your credit cards, but all you have to do is ask. Many people will never, ever do that. And I guarantee you that if every one of you looks at your bill and find a bill that you're a little bit not happy with, and you pick up the phone and you call that company and say, hey, what can you do for me? I almost bet that every one of you will save some money. And if you don't, I'll be very, very surprised. And if you don't, then you go out and you find a company that will deal with you to replace that company and to save you some money. So there's a little tech money saving tip, I guess. And this article was written in response to a cable TV bill and being able to knock. And I'm sure some of you have cable TV bills that are $100. Call your cable company, threaten them that you're going to switch to a Dish network. You know, do a little research, find out what Dish or whatever specific cable vendor that you're not currently using has for a deal, and say, this is the deal they're going to give me, and I bet you they'll make a deal to keep you as a customer. And if they don't, switch, you know, save some money. All right, there's a very interesting player that's being reviewed by Engadget. It's called the Meizu, M-E-I-Z-U. I don't know if this is a Japanese company or a Korean company that's created this, but it's a little video player. It looks to be about the size of a iPod, but it's a color, a nice little color device. and you're going to be able to do videos, play videos on it. It's got all kinds of cool stuff. You can do music on it, photos, videos, sound effects. It's actually got an FM tuner in it. You can record. You can browse with it. It's got games and tools. The price on this looks about right. Very, very positive review. And I tell you what, this device, if it's priced the way they're saying it's going to be, a 1 gig at $139, 2 gig at $159, 4 gig at $220, this thing is, with a 2.4-inch QVGA screen, very, very well could be a competitor for the iPod. And it looks like a pretty standard interface. And I think, yeah, I'm going to definitely check this out when it comes out. But I'll have the link up in the show notes to this review by Engadget. They've got some great pictures of it. And the graphics on it looks great, really does. And if you get a hold of one of these, I'd really like to see it. I really, really would. All right, over on Paul Culligan's blog at paulculligan.com, he's got an article up that says the ironic reality that the ironic reality that money matters not. Now, Paul was in our Blueberry launch meeting today, and he doesn't call us out by choice or by specifically, but he wrote this post after the demo. So I'm going to let you go ahead and check this out. He's got some very good, you know, and I sent this out to all my team members. I said, read this, see what Paul had to say. And some very good points there for anyone that is in the podcasting space and some things to keep in mind as you're moving forward. And I'm going to have to pick Paul's brain a little bit. I think he's going to be at Gnomedex, and me and him will have to sit down and share notes a little bit. But we'll report that. Hey, remember about that Comcast tech that was asleep in the guy's house when he came on a service call? He's fired. He's gone. You knew that was going to happen. That was just a given. But Comcast sincerely apologizes for their tech's, lack of regard for the customer's, you know, property and his attention to detail. But yeah, he is on the unemployment line, sleeping on the job, get you fired. Now, how many of you have slept on the job from time to time? All right. Have you fell asleep at your cubicle or in your company car or slept a little long on a lunch break or something like that? I'm sure we're all guilty of it from time to time, but you never do it where you're going to get caught or you have a camera on you, right? All right. I saw a picture. I just absolutely have to show this in the show notes. This is something that when you see it, you're going to go, ooh, my goodness. It's called Pathformer. And all I'm going to say about this is, and you're going to have to go over and look at it, is that there's a picture of a guy with his fingernail with a lot, I'm going to see here, 1, 2, 3, 4, maybe 8, 10, 12, 16 tiny little holes in the top of his, on top of his nail with a new device that delivers drugs or, you know, medications. Wait till you see this thing. It's going to make you cringe, but they're saying that it is quite the device to deliver medicines. And, oh my God, I don't know if I'd want to use one of these or not, but when you take a look at this, I'd really love to get your comments on this one. I really would. Okay, Microsoft has released, very quietly to say the least, a new beta release of Windows Vista, and it's got a lot of bug fixes. So if you are beta testing Windows Vista, make sure you get that update. And there's been a couple of changes. One was a draggable Internet Explorer tab that are part of the new build. It sounds kind of cool. So for those of you that are testing it out, like to hear about this draggable Internet Explorer tab. I guess it's about time that I download. Oh, no, not Senseo. It's about time that I download it's about time that I download this and get it on a machine and start playing around with it and giving you guys some good in-depth reviews on it from my perspective. Okay, Robin, what would a Tuesday show be without Robin Good's new media picks of the week, Sherwood Picnic number 58? And there was one in here specifically that I wanted to really point out because, you know, we've been talking about on this site about getting some of the feeds and some of the stuff translated. I've had a lot of you send me a request saying, yeah, I'll do it as long as it's not a whole, you know, a thousand words or something. But there's a new site called nativetext.com. And check this out. I'm going to read from Robin's review. Native Text is a web service that translates RSS feeds from blogs and podcasts into foreign languages. Foreign language translation is performed by a network of humans around the world, not machines. You register your website, and Navitext will grab your RSS feed every few hours, making the information available to translators. Translated pages are saved, validated, and then distributed to readers and RSS subscribers around the world through the NLS Native Language Syndication Network, and it's free to use. I'm sure they're looking for people to translate stuff. This is kind of cool. Obviously not real time, and it doesn't appear that you have to pay for it, but go ahead and check that out. Another site is up is thumbstacks.com. It's a web-based service that allows you to create presentations like slideshows or outlines right in your web browser. Another one that sounds pretty cool is called Pickle. Pickle is a new online service that lets you upload and share photos and videos over the internet. Also, let's go down through this list a little bit. Uspot is a website that allows you to create your own personal network and start sharing music, photos, videos, podcasts, and blogs, which is very interesting and that you probably need to check out. InstaFeed is a service that allows you to receive any web feed, RSS, or an Atom feed via all the instant message carriers, including MSN Messenger, Jabber, AIM, ICQ. And there's some other sites on here that you can check out as well. Over the past few months, there's been a lot of, controversy around the Whois database. And if you're not familiar with the Whois database, is what Whois allows you to do. And it's not necessarily a domain at whois.com. I think there is a domain that's called that, but that's not an official site. But most of these companies like GoDaddy have a link on their websites that says essentially Whois, and you can click Whois and put in a domain name and hit submit. And what it will do is it'll give you the results of who's registered that, the company name, contact telephone number. It's kind of a way that is used by a lot of people to find out abuse addresses. And essentially, who owns the domain, so if you want to get in contact with them, for good or bad reasons. The Federal Trade Commission today told a meeting of the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers that access to the Whois database is critical to the agency's consumer protection laws. If they use it, the FBI, FTC, they essentially go into the Whois database on a regular basis and find the contact information for sites that are abusing people by spamming or whatever it may be. And it's actually resulted by using the Whois database in judgments of millions of dollars in consumer redress. Now, they have essentially said that they want this to remain open. And what the controversy was that some people said that it is that they wanted it to be more restricted in the amount of information that was available, a lot more locked down than what it was. So it looks to me, at least, that we're going to see a continuance of the Whois database being open. In summary, the FTC believes that improvements need to be made to the current Whois database system and is committed to working with others towards a solution. In the meantime, Whois databases should be kept open, transparent, and accessible so that all agencies like the FTC can continue to protect consumers and consumers can continue to protect themselves. Now, I know GoDaddy has a private domain registration thing. It gives you a superficial amount of protection, but if a law enforcement or someone that has a legal reason to find out who the Whois information is, they kind of have to reveal that. But they do have this service that is available. It costs an extra amount of money to essentially kind of keep your Whois database private to just the general eyeballs that are looking through the Whois databases to get information. So you can consider that if you're getting ready to register a domain name and you're concerned about it. Okay, before we get into the next article, if your name is Joe Brooks, Joe Brooks, and you've been a subscriber to the Geek News Central podcast newsletter for a while, you are our $100 winner. Send email to geeknews@gmail.com and claim your $100. Joe Brooks, you are a winner. Okay, on to the next article. Now, I said earlier in the show that one of the attendees to our Blueberry launch had actually put up a posting of the what their website kind of looked like and some of the screenshots. If you go to podcastherald.com, you will find some screenshots of what the site looks like and a little information about our revenue share, what we're going to have, some of his requirements for listing. So you can check that out over on that website. Probably after the launch, I'll talk a bit more about it in detail. I don't want to do it tonight. We still got a few days to go before the site's up and online. And, of course, once it's up and online, you're going to see all our terms and services and everything is going to be available online. Now, these data brokers that were in front of Congress over the last couple of weeks, they apparently really torqued off the senators that were in these hearings. You know, Congress was trying to seek information on what these data brokers were able to obtain on personal records, emails, phone bills, and the amount of information that was revealed by some of the people that were testifying was just absolutely startling. And that what he described being a multi-million dollar industry that sells phone, cell phone records and social security information and student university class schedules and just on and on and on was an amazing amount of revelations by some people that were being testifying. But there were 11 companies that are currently in business. All of them have refused to. Here's what it says on the article. It says, refusing to testify. The committee subpoenaed representatives from 11 companies that use the internet and phone calls to obtain, market, and sell personal data. But they refused to talk. All of them invoked their constitutional right to not incriminate themselves when asked whether they sold personal, non-public information that had been obtained by lying or impersonating someone. So essentially what these companies are doing, if you want info on someone, you just got to pay one of these companies, whatever their price is, and then they'll use whatever means is necessary to gain the information about the person that you want information on. Is that scary? Is that scary? Or can imagine, you know, what these companies are doing? They're going to ex-wives, they're going to disgruntled girlfriends, boyfriends, acquaintances, anyone that they can get an edge on, apparently or supposedly, and paying them off to get the dirt on someone, get information, credit card information, spending records, you name it, anything else that companies and people want to gain info on. And this is dangerous because you think about battered wives or hiding from husbands and who have a restraining order, and they may be living in an area where they don't want them to be found. And these people can go out and buy this information and find out where cell phones are, and this whole just a litany of things that these people are gathering. And what's shocking too is that law enforcement apparently are using some of these same data brokers. Now, there was a House bill that was on the floor that was going to shut this down. And there was some pretty heavy sanctions, heavy penalties, and an enforcement was going to ensue. But the House bill was pulled mysteriously. So, I tell you, your information's out there. If somebody wants it, they're going to get it. They're just going to pay. They're going to break out the old holy green money. And guess what? You're done. Someone's going to own you. They're going to have information on you that you don't want them to have. So I highly recommend that you all employ your shredders. You know, scan what you have. Put it on a digital backup. Make sure you have a good copy of important stuff. But everything else, shred. Don't stick nothing in the trash. You know, that doesn't stop someone from going out and getting information from a company. If you're under a criminal investigation, obviously they're going to get that info no matter what. They're going to go back to the primary companies and request that info, or banks or whatever. but at least you can eliminate someone coming to your house and getting a hold of a bill and then, you know, selling that information to someone and diming you out for whatever reason. Use your shredders, okay? Mine is actually full right now. I need to do a I need to do a shred run. Here I am advocating you guys shred everything, and I've got a full shredder of stuff ready to be shred. Okay, on the consumer side today, I want you all to really think about this. Consumer groups are asking questions to states about a telecom bill that's in the it's going through the process right now. It's essentially an overlooked piece of far-reaching broadband bill that's scheduled to be debated in the U.S. Senate committee this week that would end state regulators' power to mediate in consumer complaints about wireless phone services. Now, when you have a wireless phone service, and let's say you're with company X, and they do you wrong, and they don't just, you know, they don't get you, you don't get customer satisfaction, you can go to your state consumer groups, and they will actually, they're forced to mitigate for you and act as kind of like the middleman. Well, what they're doing here is they've got some changes in this bill that's going to eliminate that. So state, several consumer groups and state attorney generals have protested the removal of state consumer protection powers in a recent draft of the Consumers' Choice and Broadband Deployment Act scheduled for amendment hearings in the Senate Committee Science and Transportation Committee Tuesday and Wednesday. So you still have time on the Senate Committee of Science and Transportation. If you have members from your states that are on that committee, take this article, look it up, then go over to Senate.gov and see which committees that your particular representative is on. If they're on, you may want to comment on this to them. You may want to pick up the telephone and voice your opinion. But again, this is all about, you know, all this stuff's going on in where the companies are trying to, companies and governments are trying to get out of the business of protecting consumers in certain instances, and this is one of them. So I'll let you guys check this out. This was an InfoWorld.com article, but, you know, the cellular telephone communication industry, they really want this to be removed because they don't want you to have the ability to mediate consumer complaints. It essentially just, it won't be in existence no more. You have a complaint, you have to take the company. If they don't serve you right, then your only recourse then is maybe take it to the FTC. But beyond having some sort of legal recourse to have a state mediation, it will not happen. Okay, how many of you still use peer-to-peer networks? How many of you have ever taken a file that you have and dropped it into the incorrect folder on your computer? And this goes for Apple users, too. They're using peer-to-peer networks. Identity thieves are apparently lurking and really trying to exploit stuff that are on peer-to-peer networks now. Because if you drop a document or you share a folder on your peer-to-peer application that has information in there that is going to give these criminals an ability to find information about you, they are out there looking, okay? Pretty good article on this on PC World. And so if you are using some peer-to-peer applications, make sure it's an application that you can trust. Make sure that you are not sharing a, you know, name that directory something like don't put personal files in here so that you'll have a difficult time just copying stuff in arbitrarily. You know, if they get a hold of some of the stuff that they're finding, they're saying they're finding what are they finding? They're finding medical records. They're finding all kinds of data. They just go into the list of stuff that people are dropping into these bank statements. Amazing. So be careful out there, all right? Okay, we're at 53 minutes, and I've got some comments for the show tonight. Man, you all have been, I think the email volume coming into the show is at its highest level that I have seen since we started doing the show. Let me take just a couple of the comments. We'll get you out of here relatively quickly. I do want to thank Michael for pointing out the link to the Comcast person that got fired. I want to thank everyone that submitted domains as well to our Weird Domain Contest. I'll probably do one more. Probably be after I get back from Gnomedex. So we'll keep you informed on that. Keep sending those in. Also, I got an email from Neil from, check this out. He's a listening to Friday's show. There were two parts I'd like to comment on. The first is a big boogie boarding and stings. He said he grew up in South Africa and spent a lot of time at the beach. And he'd get these swarms of blue bottles when the wind blew in certain directions, which is this Portuguese man of war. And there were two ways we would sort out the stinging. First is using the juice of a plant that was down there. I'm not even going to try to pronounce it. And the second thing was peeing on it. Well, I knew about that, but there was vinegar available, and vinegar was just as effective. And this is kind of the thing that I really wanted to get into in his comment. He said the second was about telephones, and this is going to make you laugh. When I left school, and this is, check this out, when I left school and completed my military service, I studied forestry and became a forest manager, and obviously that meant living in the sticks. Up until late 1998, we still had party lines, and for those of you that are been around for a while, how many of you have had a party line before? My grandma did. If some of the listeners don't know what a rotary dialing is, they definitely would not know what a party line is. So here goes. You have a handset that had no dialing interface, just a little wind-up handle on the side. You give that handle a few cranks and lift the receiver. Let the operator in the exchange know that you would like to place a call. The answer and dial you through to the number you want, but it doesn't end there. It's called a party line for a reason. You share a line with four or six other people. When someone phones you, the operator needs to ring your code because it's a shared line and everyone's phone on that line rings. So if your number is 1022, then you're on line 10 and your code was two longs and two shorts. Now, there were advantages and disadvantages of the system because it was a shared line. Others could listen on your calls. And before using your phone, you had to check if any else was on it. And, of course, people were listening on it, too. And, of course, the advantage was also that if you bought the operator a beer in a pub, they would not mark down your long-distance calls. But this was in 1998, folks. This wasn't just like 20 years ago. This was recently. So very, very cool, Neil. Thanks for that. I got a kick out of that email. Also got an email back from Fraser on our link to his article on the South Pole Telescope article. And we may have Fraser on the show at some point to talk a little bit about some of his writings that he's doing on that front. I think that's all. I'm at 56 minutes. Let me see what else have I got down here. Just got a stack of stuff. Thanks, everyone, for all your support. I really, really do. Thanks for being part of the family. If you're listening to the show for the very first time, hey, make sure you stay subscribed and tell your friends about the show. Help us build the audience here at Geek News Central. I promise to keep on bringing good tech news to you. Keep me square. If there's something you don't like about the show, send me a comment. It's very, you know, very worthwhile. But family comes first here, and you're part of the show. You're part of the family, part of my family, and we're going to keep on moving forward. If you got comments, send them to geeknews@gmail.com, geeknews@gmail.com, or call the voicemail hotline at 619-342-7365. Thank you for all being here. Again, maybe no show on Friday, maybe something abbreviated, maybe even two or three short podcasts. Who knows? Keep your eye on definitely on techpodcast.com. Thanks to all the sponsors. Thanks to all of you. And hey, check blueberry.com on Friday. We're going to bring it live. It'll be live. I want all of you getting over there, signing up for accounts, podcasters. If you haven't been on the pre-launch meetings, we want you part of our network, okay? And grow with us. We're going to have a lot of fun. All right, folks, take care. Aloha.